Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And boy, do I think we're going to have a fantastic show for you today. If you're new here, well, what do we do exactly? We take real stories of the supernatural. They could be ghosts, could be cryptid creatures, could be any matter of things. Head scratchers, one of my favorites. And we basically have real people come on and tell their stories. And we love it and we appreciate them. And from what I'm hearing, you guys appreciate us and I appreciate that. So we're all appreciative. And if you are appreciative, please subscribe or follow to the show wherever you listen. You just go and you hit that subscribe button or that follow button and you never miss an episode. Plus, it helps us tremendously. I thank you so much. And with no further ado, let's get to the campfire stories. Julia is on the line from Pittsburgh, and we're so glad to have her on the show. And she has a story that goes back to her 12th birthday. And from what I can understand, it is one that she will never forget and fits very well into what we do here at the campfire. Julia, welcome. And please tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. So I had a sleepover with some of my girlfriends for my birthday. It was me and three other girls. And one of them brought a Ouija board over. I guess a little side note, our house was, the basement was refinished and my bedroom was in the basement. So there was no windows. It was kind of creepy, but it was nice. And we had lit a few candles and we were on my bed. And I don't really remember actually us doing the Ouija board. I just remember that all of a sudden, all the candles blew out at the same time. And you have four 12-year-old girls. We all freaked. And we all ran out of my room and down the hallway and we're all sitting on the couch together. And I, if you can ask anybody that knows me, I can be a little dramatic, but I'm sitting there bawling because we were so scared. And I look over and in the corner of the living room, there was just this woman. It was see-through. Like she was just like a white floating woman, the outline of her. And then next thing I know, she rushed towards me. Now, at this point, when this happened, I went from being hysterical to feeling nothing but calm and everything went quiet. And I just remember turning my head and looking at my two friends to the right of me, and then turning my head and looking to my friend to the left of me. And she smacked me in the face. And all of a sudden, I just felt this rush come out of me and I just started bawling all over again. And they said that they were yelling my name, that it didn't look like me. Like it wasn't my face anymore.
So who smacked you?
My friend, because she said that they kept calling me. And when I turned and looked at her, I had this really weird look on my face and that something wasn't right. And I think she just reacted to snap me out of it.
Yeah, it's like you see in the movie, snap out of it, man.
No. Pretty much, yes, but I didn't feel it. Like during the time, I didn't feel it. It probably lasted maybe 5 seconds, but I remember it still to this day. It was, everything was just calm and quiet. And I always wondered if maybe she was like trying to calm me down. You know what I mean? Because I didn't feel anything like menacing or evil about it. Then my grandpa put his head out and yelled at us because it was probably like 2 a.m. and we were being loud. But that's pretty much all that happened that night. But side note, I was telling my sister I was going to be on the show and she goes, yeah, because of you and your friends, that ghost tormented me for the rest of the time we lived in that house.
Oh, gosh.
And she never told me this. And she said that when we moved her room into the basement, because like, you know, big girls' rooms were, you know, down there, that it started out as like a black fog at the edge of her bed. And then throughout time, she said by the end of it, there was a full woman. She could see her with gray hair and her arms were crossed and she would just stare at her by the edge of her bed.
Ew, that gives me the creeps. Do you guys have either you or your sister any idea who or what this might have been?
No, I'm not sure. I don't know. My sister says that it's my fault that she always blamed me and my friends for bringing her that night because we never said goodbye. Like, we all panicked and we were all immature. And, you know, looking back on it, it wasn't a very smart thing to do. I do believe that, you know, Ouija boards do hold. You have to just know what you're doing. And, you know, we were just a bunch of kids. And so, but from that point on, the basement was always, you know, papers would just be like moved, like weird things would happen, but just always in the basement. And it wasn't like a creepy basement, and it had a kitchen and bathroom, and it was nice. But so, yeah, that's my story.
That is quite a story. Now, let me ask you, any more Ouija boards at any future birthdays?
No. No, but I know you always ask people, you know, they don't seem turned off by it. It always depends on what mood I'm in. You know, if I'm feeling brave, then yeah, I'll, you know, maybe, but no, I just don't, they can stay over there and I'll be on my side. So
there you go. Well, Julia, I love that story. That is a great one. And thank you for being a part of the campfire.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good one.
Carrie is on the line from North Carolina. She's been listening for a few years. And of course, our friends over at Astonishing Legends, they always seem to come through. So make sure that you check out their excellent podcast as well. And Carrie has a story. Well, it was certainly a head scratcher. I'm not even going to try to get into it because I don't want to spoil it. It sounds too good. Carrie, welcome to the show and tell us what happened.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. I still can't totally explain it. So after you hear it, I would love to get your input and anybody else that's had a similar experience. So this happened probably about 10 years ago. I was an undergrad at a local university and I lived at home. So where I lived is about probably about 20 miles from the university. So I would go in and hang out with friends on the weekends, and it was a Friday night and kind of, it was in the fall. So one of those storms we get in North Carolina where it's just kind of a cold drizzle, just a little bit of light rain. And we were all going to go hang out at a friend's house. So get in my car. It's about 7 p.m. at night. Since it was later fall, it was already pretty dark out. And we live on a kind of a country road. So not much traffic, no street lights, houses pretty spread out. So I go down our driveway, turn onto our road, and I get about a mile down the road, and we're 3 miles back on it to where it's going to connect into the highway that goes into downtown. So I'll go about 2 miles probably, and I look up, and it's drizzly and light rain, and I just kind of glance to the side of the road, and I see these two ladies walking down the road, and it surprises me because it's 40-some degrees, cold rain, not the best situation to go for a walk. It's a narrow country road, not much shoulder, so not the safest road to be on. So I get up even with them, and the first thing I notice is that they're wearing kind of historical-looking garb. And the town, I do want to mention, the small city or small town that I live in is on the outskirts of a larger city. There's a lot of history in the town, and some of it not so great. And I don't really want to get into it too much, but it's just a very historical location. So I look over and I stop because it's just your first instinct when you see two people walking down the road in the rain is something's happened. They've gotten into a wreck or whatnot. So I stop, kind of pull off to the side of the road. Nobody else is on the road. I don't see any headlights behind me. And I roll my window down and something told me, don't roll it all the way down. I'm by myself in the car, and these two ladies are off the side of the road. It's two against one. I'm not going to go rolled in all the way. And so I'm looking at them, and they are dressed like you would see if you went up to Colonial Williamsburg or something. And they have these bonnets on. I don't know the correct term for it, but it's these white bonnets. And they kind of hug the top of the head. And they have little fringes around it. I don't know if you can visualize that.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I roll it down probably about an inch. I'm like, are you guys okay? What's going on? And one lady to the right was kind of huddled behind the first lady. And the first lady says, oh, you know, she's not doing well at all. We're trying to get to my brother's house. Can you help us? And I'm going, well, I could call your brother. Can you give me his number? And so she gave me some number. And I called and nobody answered. So she said, well, she's really not doing well. We just need a ride up the road to my brother's house. And I was going to drive through the small town that I lived in on the way to where my university was. And I said, you know, I'm going to stop at the police station and I can send somebody to come help you, but I'm just not comfortable taking somebody there. And she kept on, okay, and you acted kind of aggravated. So I pretty quickly rolled up the window and went into town. And right as I was getting close to the police station, a friend called and said, oh, you know, we're not going to hang out tonight. So-and-so's sick. So I was like, okay, great. So I'm going to turn around and go back home. So instead of going to the police station, which I feel bad that I didn't, but my thought was, oh, I'm going to see if they're still walking up the road. And if they are, then I'll turn and go back and just say, hey, you know, there's these two ladies on the side of the road that might need help. So it had not even been 5 minutes, and where I had stopped was pretty far in between houses. They would have had to walk, I want to say, at least half a mile to get to the nearest residence. It is pretty, there were some open fields on either side, so pretty visible. So I turn around and I'm going back, and even if you're running, I mean, I don't know, it was pretty long distance to go even if you were running, and they did not look like they were going to be running. So pull back around, and right where I saw them, there's nobody. I'm going, okay, well, they're probably just over this hill. Jim, I did not see them at all on the end. They were just gone. I didn't see anybody in any fields, no ditches, and the ditches aren't that deep. So I don't know. It was just this weird, spooky thing. I had a weird feeling the entire time. I've listened to things about the black-eyed kids. I didn't see anything. No eyes turned black, but it was just this weird head scratcher of a thing.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that one thing that strikes me, it's not supernatural, but it's a shame, but I totally relate to what you're saying. You want to help people, but in this day and age, you have to be very careful. I was watching an old movie over the weekend, and you know, this guy hitchhiked and it was no big deal. It's like, no, nobody with a brain would pick that person up today. That just, you wouldn't do that. So it's kind of a shame. You can't be more helpful, but you really can't, because there's a lot of, you know, I think there's some supernatural stuff running around, but unfortunately there's some very, you know, real world kind of monsters out there too. So I totally get what you were doing. So I wouldn't kick myself for that, but yeah, it almost seems like, now, do you think they may have been something? I don't even think there's Amish in that area. I know in Ohio, where we're at, there are. You don't think it was anybody present day, though? You think they may have, something about them seemed to be from the 1800s?
Yeah, I mean, they knew what a phone was. That's my big hang up. But just the way they were dressed, it was, we used to live up in Northern Virginia, and there were some Mennonites around that area. And just what they were wearing was so old fashioned. And I've never seen anybody in that area dressed as they were. That was just the kind of the thing that set me off at first.
Sure. Well, you know, we've had stories that seem like, to me, like they're time slips. I've had stories of people who were walking along, looking down, and they looked up and it was, you know, it was like that Twilight Zone walking distance they were in the past. I think, you know, I think reality is really much stranger than we know, and time is much stranger than we know. And sometimes I do wonder if there's like a crossing of the tracks, as it were, and kind of like just for a few moments, we're someplace we're, quote, not supposed to be, and vice versa. I kind of wonder if that happens, because we've had multiple stories like that.
I totally agree. I mean, we do not understand all that goes into time.
I mean, that sounds like the most, I mean, yeah, I mean, there is the possibility maybe somebody else did pick them up. But the fact, what you're saying is that they seem so out of time, and their clothing seems so out of time. That's the thing that I'm keying in on that tells me that, hey, maybe it was some kind of weird time slip.
Maybe so, yeah. I do have a very quick, if we've got time.
Sure.
A shadow person story.
Oh, please.
Yeah, it's quick. But I did an internship one summer up in Fairbanks, Alaska. And up there in the summer, it stays light all the time. No, it doesn't get dark. So this is at the end of the internship, and it was starting to get a little dark in the middle of the night. I remember going to sleep one night, and I was dead asleep, and I hear a huge thump on my bedside table, and I go open my eyes, and this thing is just hovering over me, and it's all I see is black and a silhouette of a man with one of those bowler hat type things.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it scared me so bad, Jim, that I sat up straight in the bed and it just disappeared. Like I blinked and it was gone. And I turned the light on, even though it was pretty light outside. I'm religious. I'm a Christian. So I put on my cross necklace.
You know,
so
I don't blame you.
I did not sleep with the lights off for an entire week. It scared me so bad. And I, you know, until I started listening to your show and listening to Astonishing Legends, I had no idea other people had seen similar things. And that has freaked me out.
So. Yeah, I tell you. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I was just talking with another caller off air earlier. I've heard so many of these stories of shadow people and the hat man and people having time slips.
That's what I called him, the hat man. Yeah, I called him the hat man for years.
Yeah, I really believe that these things happen. Now, what they are, that I don't know. But I believe these things happen because I've heard it too many times from too many different people. And Carrie, thank you so much for sharing your stories tonight on The Campfire.
Thank you, Jim. What a treat this is. Thanks for doing the show.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Earnest. And Earnest is the easiest way to refinance your student loan, saving you time and money. You know, a little financial relief goes a long way. And student loan refinancing with Earnest can help you pick a monthly payment that fits your budget so you can breathe easy today. Now, if you're still paying the same rate you were when you graduated, odds are you could reduce your monthly payment and save big. Even if you've refinanced before, with today's low-rate environment, most people can save by refinancing again. And checking your new rate? Well, fast and easy. To start, complete a few simple questions online. It only takes 2 minutes, and you'll get a personalized rate estimate all without affecting your credit score. And if you qualify, Earnest offers customizable loan terms and no fees. You can even combine private and federal loans. Imagine having one single monthly payment with one low rate. And if you've already refinanced a loan, well, not to worry, you can still be eligible to lower your rate again. Now, the thing is that when I was approached with this, I did check it out. And I've got great news for you. The internet loves Earnest and their customer service. They're rated 9.4 out of 10 on Trustpilot, so you'll always get the support you need. And this is something that is near and dear to me because I got through school on student loans to college and had to pay them back. And it was just a pain figuring out who owned what loan and all of that. They'd sell the loans, all kinds of things. My daughter now is in college, and part of her picture, we help her out, but she had to take some loans, so this is on her horizon. So I am so glad there is Earnest, and they have a great deal for us. Start saving today. Campfire listeners get a $100 cash bonus when you refinance a student loan at earnest.com/campfire. That's a $100 cash bonus when you refinance a student loan at earnest.com/campfire. Go to earnest.com/campfire today. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks, Earnest.
You're listening to Jim Harold's Campfire.
Eric is up next on The Campfire. He's calling in from Wisconsin, and I've got to say, this is a disturbing story, and creepy and spooky happenings. Eric, thank you for sharing this story. And it starts on a very disturbing note that involved your son. Tell us what happened, and thank you for joining us.
Hi. So about 2 weeks after this last Halloween, my 13-year-old son was spending the night by his friend Nate's house. It was a Friday. Everything was fine. So Saturday morning, I wake up, and around 10 a.m., we get a call from the police, and they said, "We have your son, and there's a dead body involved," and they couldn't tell us anything more.
Oh, gosh. That's like a nightmare scenario for a parent.
Yeah. Like, my gut just fell out of my pants, you know, that feeling where your stomach just, ugh. So I immediately started driving to the police station to figure out what was going on. So then they called me again and said, basically, we have your son at a bank. Him and his buddies, he had three other friends. They were exploring a creek that's called the KK River in West Allis, Wisconsin. It's like a concrete, V-shaped concrete creek that snakes through the city. And they happened to see what looked like, they thought, was a Halloween decoration, like one of those skeletons.
Right.
That you hang from a tree or something like that. And upon further inspection, they found out it was real.
Oh, so it was a real human body.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Not much was left. Just a little bit of leathery skin, apparently. So I drove to the bank to pick him up. And I saw it myself from the bank parking lot. We left the bank and he's like, hey, Dad, look, you can see it. And he points and it's about 50 yards away. And I'm like, holy crap. I could see the rib cage and the skull.
Oh my gosh.
This is in a fairly urban area too.
Yeah, that's weird. And the thing is that, I mean, I think as kids, we all did stuff and we're like, oh, let's find something creepy. But finding something like that, I mean, you know, it might sound fun in a horror novel or something like that, like It or something. But I mean, when you're talking about real people and young people seeing those like a body like that, that could be, I'm sure it was extremely traumatic.
Yeah. So we were leaving and I, you know, I saw the body and the cops yelled at me for looking at it. For some reason. So I take him home and everyone's, you know, flummoxed, like, wow, you know, what are the odds of that? I mean, it's hard to see the actual skeleton. I mean, it's amazing that he even saw it. And I could see, like, in the summertime, that would have been fully grown foliage and stuff. No one would have found the guy. So then eventually the news media caught on to it and it, you know, turned into like a pretty popular news story. And a newscaster ended up texting me. I think my sister gave her my number. And they ended up coming to my mom's house to record an interview with my son. And you could find it on YouTube. Just search for Young Jorgensen Man Finds Dead Body. And you can watch it. So about a week later, they released the name. His name, I'll just call him Robert. If someone really find out this stuff, they can if they want to. But I won't name names.
Yeah, let's not give the real name. That doesn't help anybody.
So I was looking on his Facebook page and he had posts saying he wanted to commit suicide back in July. It was the end of July he did it. So he was only out there for about 3 months.
Oh, how sad.
Some people really do it, so you can't ignore stuff like that.
Yeah, and I'll just take this opportunity, and when this comes up on the show, I always mention it. If you or anybody you know is having thoughts of self-harm and those kind of things, there are people available to help. In fact, I'll give out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number right now, 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. And if you have thoughts like that, or you know somebody that does, they should reach out. Help is available, and we certainly want people not to take that step, and in no way do we want to make light of that. So please, if you're needing help, check out that hotline by all means, please. But go ahead, Eric. I'm sorry.
So I was looking at his posts, and on the one that he said he wanted to commit suicide, I noticed a younger woman was saying, does anybody know where my uncle is? We're trying to find him. Apparently he didn't have a residence. He was like a drifter for the last couple months of his life. So I added her on Facebook for the heck of it, because I was curious about this guy and what his story was. So a couple days later, she adds me and I start talking to her, and she's telling me about him, showing me pictures and stuff. And meanwhile, the day or two after Wes finds the body, he starts becoming incredibly lucky at school. So the Monday after finding the body, he was at a job fair at school, and he went up to a statistician's booth, those guys that calculate odds and stuff like that. And he had a game for people to play where he had some dice. So Wes went up and with his friends at school, and the guy says, if you guess two numbers and then roll them three times in a row, you can win this fancy pen. So Wes guessed 1 and 6, and then he rolled them three times in a row.
The astronomical, yeah.
Yeah. Then right after that, he wins a school raffle for ice cream. And then a couple days later, he wins another raffle for 6 movie tickets. And at first, I was like, wow, maybe the staff feels bad for him because they heard about what happened. But then I found out it's a computer-chosen raffle.
Oh, how weird.
Plus, he won 2 raffles prior to that in earlier in October. I mean, the odds of winning so many times, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So back to the young woman on the dead man's Facebook profile. So she adds me and I start talking to her. And I just happened to mention to her that, so basically I hear voices and I see faces when I'm in the hypnagogic state sometimes. That's like when you're basically in between awake and asleep. I hear like men, women, kids sometimes. And it's not like I hear it all the time. It's like, it's actually kind of hard because I have to do it where I don't fall asleep. I have to be like sitting up in a computer chair. It's like kind of hard to do, actually. I just mentioned that to her and I said, you know, for the heck of it, can you picture your uncle? Because she was his niece. And could you picture your uncle and tell him to send me a message? And she's like, okay. So later that night, I was just smoking a cigarette by the side door, just zoning out and looking off in the distance. And roller coasters, like mental imagery of roller coasters and stuff, entered my mind. I'm like, that almost looks like Six Flags Great America. So I said to her later on, like the next day, does Six Flags mean anything to you? And she says, no. So about 2 weeks goes by, and I was back on the guy's Facebook profile. Mind you, I can only see what he posted. I can't see anything anyone else has posted because I'm not friends with this guy because, you know, he can't add me anymore. So I see this other guy and I add him and I start talking to him. Apparently he's good friends with this Robert. And we found out that one of the kids with Wes when the body was found is this guy's nephew. Some of the odds of that are crazy. I mean, Milwaukee has 1 million people in it. So after we, you know, we're like, wow, that's weird. And then I start telling him about how lucky Wes was getting after finding the body. And he goes, yeah, that reminds me of the time me and Bob, we were at Six Flags Great America. And Bob won a bunch of prizes. I almost started crying when he said that.
So do you think that this man, in some way, your son and his friends found him? And I'm just talking out loud. I don't know if this is what it is. Could it be in some way maybe he was grateful that they found him so he could be put to rest and his family could be notified and so forth? Do you think maybe he was trying to maybe repay that in some way by making your son lucky and getting messages to you and things? Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, that's what I think. And then the guy, he sends me a screenshot of a post he made on Robert's Facebook profile talking about that Great America memory. He posted that about 2 days after I originally asked Bob's niece if Six Flags meant anything to her.
Well, Eric, I got to tell you, that's a very powerful story. Now, I hope your son is doing okay now and he's been able to cope with this and deal with it.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good.
Good. That is certainly some story. I do want to leave it with this. Again, if you have any thoughts and you're down and think of doing something harsh, don't do it. Reach out to that National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. And hopefully folks will dial that if they need help, and help is there. Eric, it's a remarkable story. It's certainly not a happy story, and we want to treat it with all seriousness, but it is definitely very, very chilling. And I hope that this gentleman has found peace on the other side. Thank you so much for joining us and telling your story tonight.
Thank you.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Shudder, and it is the streaming service where you can stream great thrillers and horror and supernatural, and we've got a great deal for you coming up. You know, Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, human-curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. They call it the Netflix for horror. And I got to tell you, they're constantly coming out with new things. If you love horror, spooky stuff, you got to check it out. I'm loving it. Now, their new exclusive series is called The Deadlands, and it's currently streaming, and it features a slain Maori warrior, Waka Nukarau, who's sent back to the world of living to redeem his sins. But the world he returns to is ravaged by a breach between that of the living and the dead. So you're going to want to check that out, and I love it. They have these classic horror movies. They have newer horror movies. I love Joe Bob Briggs. He's one of my favorites. His show is on there. Fantastic. And the other nice thing is you can stream The Unexpected on all of your favorite devices, including your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Xbox One, Amazon Fire TV, Android, Google Chromecast, Roku, and It's just fantastic. They really have an unparalleled selection. Interface is super clean. It's ad-free. It is fantastic. I think that you'll really enjoy it. And they have a great deal for us. You can get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. Shudder's expertly curated collection includes titles like the acclaimed Tigers Are Not Afraid, One Cut of the Dead, Revenge, and the acclaimed Creepshow TV series produced by Greg Nicotero, and that all-new series I told you about, The Deadlands, which is currently streaming. So, to try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com and use the promo code CAMPFIRE. That's Shudder.com and use that promo code CAMPFIRE. I think you'll absolutely love it. I love it. It's one of my favorite streaming services. It is the streaming service for horror, thriller, and supernatural content. You are going to love it. Check out Shudder. Thanks, Shudder.
You're listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Now, back to another great story.
Next up on the show is Jason. He's calling in from Missouri today, and he has a story that goes back to the 90s, and I'll just tell you, it's an interesting one. Jason, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
Well, thanks, Jim. So this all took place from 1994 to 1999. I wasn't ready for college, and I dropped out, and I decided to move back to my hometown. But my mom had moved away to Illinois, so I was on my own at 18. So I went and got a job at a grocery store and rented a trailer. So I moved into this trailer, and I'll just give you a layout of it because this is where everything happened. It was you go through the front door, you'd have the kitchen to the right, a living room, and then a hallway, and it had a small bedroom, and then a bathroom, and then the master bedroom in the back. So it all started out pretty normal. Every once in a while, you would hear a weird noise or, like a light would turn on. But I would always chalk it up to something that was normal, logical, bad wiring or something like that. So, a couple months went by and things started escalating. And I started hearing footsteps, and I would hear like when I was in my bedroom, I would hear mumbled conversations. I heard that from it would be in the living room or the kitchen. I'm not sure which, but it was from the other side of the trailer, and it was always like different voices. It wasn't just like one voice. It was like different sounding voices talking to each other.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it was really creepy. So one night, I was like laying in bed. I was trying to go to sleep. Still had the light on and everything. But all of a sudden, I got this feeling like that something was watching me. And I don't know, the air kind of felt like it was electric almost. And I felt like something was watching me from right outside my door. And that was like 2 feet from my face. And then all of a sudden, it yelled out my name. and it sounded like a demonic voice, like you'd hear in the movies or something, and kind of goes like this. It was like, Jason.
Ooh.
And, oh, yeah. So I threw my covers over my head, and I ended up praying myself to sleep that night. And this actually turned out to be somewhat a normal thing in my life for those 5 years.
Now, did you just stick with it because you had to, or did you just decide, hey, nothing's going to run me off? What were you, what was your thinking?
Oh, no. I was frightened to death. I was, you know, I was working as at a grocery store for $4.75 an hour.
Yeah, so you didn't have a choice.
No, yeah, it was like the cheapest place in town, and I had no other choice. I didn't have money for food half the time, so I didn't have anywhere to go. So I kept living there, and it would be like once or twice, you know, a month or so that it would keep doing this, where it would yell my name, and then I'd go hiding and everything else. And so one night, this is probably the fourth year I was living there. I had kind of gotten used to it, but I was having a conversation with my friend Tim. All of a sudden, there was like this, we were in the living room, and all of a sudden from the like back room, there was like a moaning sound. And then like the jangling of chains, kind of like Bob Cratchit or something. And I was like, oh, just ignore it. I was like, just ignore it. Let's just keep talking. And all my friends knew the place was haunted. So they had some experiences themselves.
Now, did you know anything about the history of the place? Was it like, you know, was there like a mean old man or something that lived there before? Did you know anything about that?
I did not. I did not ask anybody about it. I didn't. There was no, well, I guess there was internet back then, but I didn't know what it was. And you couldn't really look anything up or anything like that. So I didn't know anything. I just kind of went off with the whole thing or the whole experience that I was going through. But so it was doing that, and it was moaning and jangling chains. We tried to ignore it. It kept doing it, and I got mad. And I jumped up, and I walked really fast into the dark hallway. And I yelled, in the name of Jesus Christ, get out of my house. And it kept doing it, but, you know, it didn't leave. But it was almost like a turnaround point in me living there. It never yelled my name again. And like things kind of de-escalated and stopped happening. So that was basically most of the experiences I had there, except for one head scratcher. And I know you love him.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So one night I was laying in bed, and instead of mumbled conversations, it was actual conversation that I could hear and understand. But it wasn't like a stranger's voice. It was all of my friends' voices and like doppelganger type stuff. And it was a conversation from months before. So I was listening to it, and I understood everything that they were going to say, and I knew what they were going to say. And I knew that I was in this conversation as well. And my part was coming up. And when it came up, it was like my voice was edited out.
Oh, wow.
And then the conversation continued. I don't know what that was all about. It lasted for about 5 minutes and then stopped. I just do not understand. I've never heard anything quite like that. So I thought maybe you had.
No. I've heard doppelganger things. I've heard, you know, weird conversations, but I've never heard one replayed from before, because to me that would be like, oh, well, there's some kind of residual haunting going on. But then the fact your voice was edited out, that's what gets me. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, it was really strange. Yeah, I don't get it.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one, Jason. I got to tell you, that is a head scratcher, absolutely. But obviously, you got out of there, and nothing since. No other strangeness since, really.
No, I was actually kind of worried that it would try to follow me, but it didn't, and I've never had any paranormal experiences since. So. Thank God.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you one bit. Great story. Great story. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing a great story. And yeah, let's hope whatever that was, it certainly stays away. But thanks again for being a part of the campfire.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Patty is on the line from New Jersey, and she has a very poignant story about her brother. And we really appreciate her sharing this very personal story. Patty, I know you've been listening for a couple of years. You say you've told much of your family who listens as well. So thank you for that. And thank you for sharing this story. Please tell us what happened.
Okay. It's about my brother. He had passed in 1988. He had a motorcycle accident. He left two children and my sister-in-law behind. It was 2 weeks later after his death. I call it a visitation because I really don't know how to explain it. Some people would say it's a dream, but I think my brother was there. I fell asleep after having an argument with my sister because she wanted to take my son, who at the time was only 11 years old, to a place in Pennsylvania. It's called Knoebels, and there's a water place to go, and it's a very big amusement park area and everything, and I just didn't want to let him go. And my sister was a little upset with me, and I had gone to bed upset. I went to sleep. My husband came in. He went to sleep also. And I woke up. I don't remember what time it was, but I know it was later. It must have been around maybe 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, somewhere in that area. I felt cold. I was on the left side of the bed, and I turned to the left, and I saw my brother. And at the time, I was, in my mind, I was saying, how could he be here? He's dead. You know, I was afraid. Even though he's my brother, I was afraid because in my mind I was saying he was dead. So he put his hand out, he put it on top of my right hand, and then he cupped it with his other hand. And he looked at me. My brother was very handsome. He had dark curly hair, green eyes, and they really stuck out. And I knew it was him. And he said to me, let him go. And I said, what are you doing here? What are you talking about? What are you saying? What are you saying to me? I was like scared, confused, so many things. And then he just said again, let him go. And then I realized, I said, you mean my son to go to Knoebels? And he said, yes, let him go. And in my mind, I was saying, oh my God, I just can't believe this. And then my whole, I can't explain it. I just said, yes, I will let him go. And his hand slipped out of mine. He went backwards and he said to me before he left, please look after Jenna and John. And I said, okay. And they were his children. So I have done that. They're all grown now. But this is my story. I have another one, but it's long and it's very detailed. So I really don't want to go into that right now. I would like to call on another time. But people can say what they want. He was there. To me, he was there. My husband woke up, as a matter of fact, who doesn't believe in anything. And I was sitting on the edge of the bed with my hand out. And I said to him, my brother was here. You know, it was just, I believe he was there. I believe I saw him. I believe I spoke with him. And the end of the story is I did let my son go and nothing happened to him. But I was determined that my son was not going to go.
So to me, it really speaks, you know, because I know as a parent, there have been times when I've made a decision very firmly, and neither heaven nor earth would change my mind. So to me, to make that kind of a decision, and I'm sure you're similar, once I made that decision, that was pretty much it.
Yes, I'm a very stubborn Irish person, yes.
So my point being that I absolutely believe your brother was there, and I believe that it must have been so real to you and so powerful to you to make that change, because it sounds like your initial decision, you were totally, nothing was going to sway you.
No, nothing was going to sway me. And he went, he had a wonderful time, you know, and it was a place that my brother brought his own children. My sister-in-law's family always went there. So it was just, it was meant to be. It's just that it was only 2 weeks after my brother's death.
Sure.
It hit us hard. We're a very big family. We have 6 in my family. And there's 4 girls and there were 2 boys. My brother passed, and he was only 30 when he did pass. So, yes, it was, I don't know. All I know is I know in my heart he was there.
And I've got to believe, as difficult as the passing of your brother was, that after that, I'm guessing that did provide you some level of comfort?
It did. Very much so. Very much so. Like I said, I've had other experiences after that. But this one, it was just the fact, like you said, that I had let my son go. And it's just that many things have happened after that. But like I said, that would take time. And I really don't want to go into it right now. But it was like a ball that just kept going. And that kept going for at least 2 years afterwards. But I know he's there. And I also now take care of my niece's son. So I helped with my nephew and my niece, and now I'm watching my niece's baby. So it's I am doing what he said to do.
That is so nice. And when you're ready, and if you ever want to, we'd love for you to come back and tell us the continuation of this story. But how touching that is. And thank you so much for sharing that very personal story tonight on The Campfire.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, I am going to be live in Nashville on March 24th, and I hope that you'll join me. It's at Zany's Nashville. We'll be doing Campfire Live. If you like this show, you'll love the stage show. It's going to be a lot more of the same, and we'll have a few surprises and special guests as well. So how do you get your tickets? Just go to jimherold.com/live. I know we had initially sold out of our first 50 VIP tickets, and then the good people over at Zany's added some more. And now, as of this recording, we only have 10 of those left in terms of the VIP tickets. And from what I understand, we have plenty of general admission available. So please go over there if you want to get those VIP tickets, which include a meet and greet, jimherold.com/live. And then also there are general admission tickets, and tickets start at $20 plus applicable taxes and fees. So it's very economical, and I hope if you're in driving distance of Nashville that you'll join us. I thank you so much. Go to jimherold.com/live to get your tickets. jimherold.com/live. Thanks. Well, we have a return caller. Emilio is back. You might remember he was on a while ago telling a great story, and we're so glad to have him back. Now, he is a paranormal investigator. And he has some strange experiences that he wants to tell us about. Emilio, welcome back, and tell us about these investigations and the strangeness that ensued.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. Back last year in 2019, our paranormal group was invited alongside another group here in North Texas to investigate helium plant number one here in Fort Worth. It was one of the first helium plants ever. It was an experimental helium plant back in World War One, and you know, they use natural gas extraction for helium and stuff like that. But the building that we got access to was Warehouse 9, and that used to be the infirmary building. Now, going into it, we didn't expect too much because it's presently one of the buildings there is a haunted house attraction. So we weren't really expecting much. We went in there, we were thinking, oh, it's just some spook factor. But it was a very interesting experience. We had one incident there where we were walking through one of the back rooms, a big open room, and it's real drippy, water leaking from the ceiling and everything. And back in the corner of this room, there was another little... It was kind of another little room, but it was just like blocked off by a curtain. And I had a camera and a recorder back in that little corner room. And we were in the big open room. It's kind of hard to explain. But and we were just going about our normal investigation routine, asking questions and whatnot. And I thought I heard a noise come from that little corner room. So I walked back in there and checked my equipment and everything, made sure everything was still running and everything seemed good. So I turned to go back to the rest of the team, and right in the right side of my face, I hear this real low guttural growl. It freaked me out. I jumped back, had a few expletives, And come to find out, a little bit later, we went back to the base and checked the equipment and everything, and I'd actually caught the growl on audio. So it was real. It's hard to explain the growl, but I mean, it was something else.
Yeah, that's, well, as I understand it, nobody else heard it, but then you, as you said, you captured it, a recording of it. So, wow, that's, so everybody realized, you know, Emilio was being leveling with us here. There was a growl.
Yeah, at first everyone thought I was just, you know, playing it up or something, but after we heard it on the recorder, everyone, you know, just took a step back, like, didn't really know what was going on.
And then you talked about the one with the storage room, that not the zombie room, but the storage room. Tell us about that one, if you would.
Yes. So we, right next to our where we had set up our little base, we had all our monitors and everything for the cameras. There's a small little storage room, maybe, you know, 15 by 15 feet, not very big. And it was just blocked off by a fire curtain. So, you know, we could still hear quite a bit of stuff that, you know, if we were back in there, we would hear us. And so Don, one of the people from the other teams, he walked outside to go check his equipment, or he had something he had to go do outside. So he walked outside, and one of the other investigators was in there watching the cameras, and he started hearing some rustling and some movement coming from that little storage room. But he kind of blew it off, didn't think anything of it. He thought maybe Don had come back in and gone back there to grab something. So he just kind of blew it off, didn't think anything about it. So then about 5 minutes later, Don comes walking in from the opposite direction. And our investigator says he kind of poked his head up and was really confused and asked Don, you know, hey, were you just in that room? And he just said, no, I've been outside for the past 10 minutes. So they all went looking in the room and couldn't find anything out of place or anything to explain the noises that he heard coming from there. But he said it was very clear, like somebody was moving around, shuffling his feet or moving furniture around and stuff as well.
And the EVPs that you captured in that seemed pretty pronounced as well, no?
In that instance, we didn't catch any EVPs. There was one EVP that was caught by a volunteer that we had there, because we were doing, we did multiple stays at this place. One of the times we were there, we were hosting a public event where we're having like a bunch of people come in and do an overnight paranormal investigation. And on this instance, the event was winding down, so there weren't a whole lot of people left. And the people who were left were some of the more serious people. You know, all the jokesters and everyone else that had come to the event, they had already started dwindling out and everything. So we were in what we call the boiler room, which is not really a boiler room. It just has a bunch of old, like mechanical equipment and stuff in there. And we had a group of like three people that were in that room, and we were doing just a small EVP session. And one of the volunteers that we had, he asked the question, do you want to come out and talk to us? We're not here to cause any harm. We just want to have some fun. And on the recorder, you can't hear it. Nobody heard anything at the time, but we went back on the recorder and you could hear clear as day, the EVP says, "We are all dead. Enough."
Oh, that was the one that you wrote me about that got me. It's like, wow, that's kind of putting it out there, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I got to believe over the years after doing this, you've developed some theories. What do you think you guys are picking up on? Are they sentient? Do they know what's going on? Are these residual hauntings? Is it a mix? Are they kind of innocuous and benign? Are they sinister? Are they both? What do you think?
You know, I like to think that there's a mix of both, but we just don't have the technology or the means to understand what's what, what's quote unquote evil or what's good. So I don't know. I mean, especially at that place, it's hard to tell, because it's you never know what you're going to get.
I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, we don't have the answers, but it's interesting to ask the questions, have people out there like you and asking the questions and doing the investigations. And please, as you have more experiences, please call back in and let us know what happens. Emilio, thank you for being a part of the campfire tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, I hope that you enjoyed that show as much as I did. They just seem to get creepier and creepier, and we do appreciate everybody who called in. And if you appreciate the show, as I said at the beginning, please subscribe or follow wherever you listen, that favorite podcast app, whatever it may happen to be. That lifts us up in the charts, gets us more listeners, more storytellers, and more great stories. Everybody wins. Thank you so much for being a part of the campfire. We'll talk to you next time, and as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.